So welcome back, Kirsten. Her last session on Madagascar, hidden in plain sight. Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you, Sharon. Oh my gosh, I'm going to play this one again just so you can kind of see it in the background if you want to look. Well, wait. And I'll give you an idea of what we're going to do today while you can watch this. I bought a GoPro because I can't get it very steady, so I'm going to try and do these when I go back again. So if it makes you sick to watch, don't do that. Don't watch. But this is just driving actually into Tana, coming in from the south. And just to give you a little perspective, this is a national road. Like, this is as big as it gets. So this is your interstate. So this is the highest quality road we got going. One of the widest. There's a couple in the city of Tana that are a little bit bigger. It is a city of 1.4 million, so you do have a little bit more need for width. There are many more cars in the city than there are on the road. But
our roads, we cross under a railroad right here.
Yeah.
Is the railroad network very extensive and being used?
Is the railroad very extensive and being used? No.
Oh.
We said the other day that Madagascar was colonized by the French, and during that time they came in and they built a lot of infrastructure of which to use to extract materials from lumber to minerals to rice to any sorts of vanilla, coffee, all these different things that would come out. They're not particular. They're the same as, or it's not just the French that did this. This is kind of how we colonized many different lands. But since they gained independence in 1960, a lot of the infrastructure has just kind of fallen into disrepair. So there are actually two lengths of railroad, but they don't connect. And one of them is from the main port of the island up to the capital city, and another one is from Fianar, which is that's like a 8 to 9 hour drive south of the capital city, going back out towards the ocean. But is anyone familiar with Anthony Bourdain?
Yes.
He did a show on Madagascar a few seasons ago. If you can find it anywhere, let me know, because I'm keep trying to look for it and never finding it anymore. But in that episode, he went and previewed or showed that second run of railroad. And if you look on a map, you have to drive kind of north to go south. You do this arch to get from where the starting point is to the other point. And in that drive, that usually takes us around 7-8 hours drive. But the railroad, which goes straight out and descends, can take up to like 21-24 hours, because they're constantly repairing it. It's never going to make it all the way through the run without needing a repair. So it's kind of amazing how that all functions. But I kind of got ahead of myself. My name is Pastor Kirsten Latterger. Kirsten, I am a pastor with the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I work with a program called YAGM, which is Young Adults in Global Mission. And so I bring young adults age 21 through 29 to Madagascar. Madagascar is not the only place that we have the program, or the ELCA has this program. It's one of 11 countries, but I'm kind of partial to Madagascar. I've been there 2.5 years, and so we're going to kind of just talk about some different things. We've been talking about different things about Madagascar. And today, well, first of all, I'm holding this so I remember. I keep, like, not sharing my chocolate with you guys. So I hope there's enough for the whole group. Take one sample. That is a treat from Madagascar. And I don't want any to come back to me, okay? So just eat away and enjoy. Please feel free to ask questions as we go through today. What I thought we would do is just kind of talk about some of the things that I encounter every day, some of the things that affect me in my existence in Madagascar. And I think that is kind of an opening to the larger realities of Madagascar and many countries like it, actually. So let's see if we can get alive here again on the screen. Maybe, maybe not. All right. Madagascar. We're calling this the underbelly because some of the stuff isn't really the fun stuff, but it's the real stuff. Our first day, if you were here on Monday, who's here on Monday? Oh, yay, some of you are here on Monday. So on Monday, we reminded you that Madagascar is more than a movie, right? A lot of different things going on. And then, who's here Wednesday?
Is that a good movie?
Is it a good movie? It's very real. It's very real. It's cute. It's a cute movie. There's no question. But I can't endorse it from this perspective here.
It's about an invasion of non-indigenous animals.
It's an invasion of non-indigenous animals, and you could say that in some realities there's an invasion of non-indigenous humans that have caused some issues in Madagascar as well. Then on Wednesday, who was here Wednesday? Anyone here Wednesday? A few of you are here Wednesday? So then on Wednesday, we talked about a religious revival movement called the Fifuwasna, and the biggest kind of point or takeaway from that is it's the movement that is driving the growth of the church, not only the Lutheran church, but the Reformed church, even some of the Catholic church. And their big push within the revival is service, love, and care of another. That includes anything from great hospitality to prayer and exorcism. And But today, we're going to talk about the other stuff. And my first question is, will we ever get away from politics? Who wants to get away from politics? Right? Oh, my gosh. Well, we can't hear either. So, this is previous president Mark Ravumalana. He became president in 2002. He is right now considered a very beloved character. People remember that, or in their imagination, is that it was the best of times kind of thing. We were growing, and he was reaching out to many people. And I think that there's some statistical analysis that there was growth within the country, certainly during that time. But what people aren't always reminding me of is the fact that he came in a contested win, and it was a violent entrance that he came and ascended into the presidency. And that's significant because this guy, Rajamarana, came in 2009, and he is the leader of a military coup. At that point, the country got cut off from the rest of the world. Not because they cut themselves off, but the rest of the world says, we do not recognize your government, right? So we will not support you or endorse you. And then if you look at all the statistics on everything, kind of went down, 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 down. Series of negotiations came into being, and he agreed, and so did this guy, who was, by the way, exiled to South Africa at that point. These two agreed that they would stand back from an election in 2013 and let the people vote. And when the people voted, they voted for this guy. And I won't even try to say his name. His name has got like 10 different syllables, the last name. But he just goes by Harry, H-E-R-Y. So President Harry is the current president. I can tell you, so he came in 2014. I arrived in 2015. It's now 2017. I can say that there are signs of life, signs of development in a few places. I don't know that it has anything to do with his directly with his leadership or the fact that the doors are opened again. But what I can tell you is nothing is ever settled in Madagascar. Because the election, the next election will be in 2018, either November or December. By the Constitution, it has to be before the rainy season starts, which is usually November, December. And the current president and his administration sets the date. And they don't have, like, and it must be set before, you know, like, I don't know that he can say it's tomorrow. I think he really can't do that. But I don't know how much further ahead of time that he has to do that. So if you were to come to Madagascar with me, and you were hanging out, we would open the paper or we'd get online or whatever we do in the morning if we actually are not traveling around on all those crazy roads, but we're in the capital city. And we would look through the paper and we would see pictures of this guy, and this guy. All already jockeying for power and privilege. Since I have been here, this guy, since I've been here in the United States, and I've been here for a month this time, and I was back, so it's been a month. I go back on Monday. I was in the Madagascar for 6 weeks, and then 2 months before that. So in that amount of time, he's had two different political rallies where this guy has shut him down, and he's managed to work around and get it done anyway. It's been crazy. It's a crazy thing. So it's power, power, power. Fighting for each other, not necessarily worrying about anything else that's happening in the land. There's a lot of resources in Madagascar. One of the things we talked about on Monday is that cows or zebu or umbi are a central part of culture and reality, yet they're also another part of corruption. So cows, if we see them walking generally like these, we know that they are just being bred and, you know, and grown to be sold legitimately in the cow land. But then you see cows on trucks going up to Tana, or cows going down to a newly established place down in Fort Tifon and one other, that those cows just kind of disappear. And those cows are feeding some of the political capital that's keeping these people in all the power that they have.
Are they being exported then?
They're being exported, yeah. So, and that's not the, it's not just cows that this is happening through. This happens through lumber. This happens through gems. And this happens through different business opportunities. So this guy makes yogurt on a very large scale. This guy just opened up a chain of stores. You know them because they're orange, and that's his party affiliation color. And this guy's wife has got very interesting dealings with the clove industry. We'll leave it at that.
Now, do they have, like, tribal groupings as well as political, or... identified with any particular of the 22 groups you mentioned?
Yeah, so what ends up happening is typically, I think all of these guys are Mirna, which is in the capital. I can't tell you that for sure. But votes are easily bought, sometimes for a promise in a shirt, T-shirt, or a meal in a T-shirt. Which sounds like ridiculous, or even like I have no standards, or I have no whatever. But people are desperately poor. People have many people have absolutely nothing, and so a promise or a $5 equivalent, a shirt, a meal, survival for a little bit longer, right?
Now, is it a secret ballot then? I mean, these people are being bought, but I mean, what guarantees that they vote the way they're paid for?
Nothing necessarily.
But it happens.
I mean, well, who knows? It's secret, right? But
yeah.
That, how do these people ascend?
Yes.
And it's not uncommon. Many people, if you've traveled, I'll only talk about the continent and the mainland continent of Africa, and going out into the bush, going far, they're away from the main cities, and you will see these beautiful signs for the next presidential candidate and wonderful shirts that people are wearing. So it works in some way. Yeah. They buy villages. They actually, this is what made me talk about this, is they try to buy churches too, right? So that's a clan or a group as well. So you will see, this is from the Fifuwazana, from Ankaramalaza, the revival that we talked about on Wednesday. This gathers 15 to 20,000 people, as I mentioned, and it gathers the most significant leadership of the church. So who else comes to this thing?
Political candidates.
So some of them will even helicopter in just for the big day. And they always get to sit like right here, you know, front row. So they're all connected. They're very accessible. I've been on a plane, regular plane with them before. I certainly didn't try to, but I was. Yeah. So.
There are no other candidates?
I believe there's one more candidate at this point. I'm sure many will arise because they don't have this, you know, two-party or even 10-party system. Parties get created. So I think at the last election, if I remember correctly, it was like 13 different parties. So, yeah. Yeah, it gets so confusing. And who knows what's going to happen? Because even going back like this, this guy, what do you think his wife is doing right now? Any ideas? His wife is the mayor of Tana. Tana, the capital city, which usually gives us who the next president's going to be. So who knows, right? We keep watching. Oh, he was in exile until after he came, and he was allowed to come back. And I think that, I don't know for sure, but I don't doubt that was all part of all the agreements that were being made for this free election and to get international support to come back into the country. So, yeah, I got to Madagascar before he got back, but he came back. Ask that question one more time.
The color of these guys, political guys, are pretty light colored, it looks like.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, so that's, we're going to kind of jump around then since you asked that question. So racism, tribalism, colorism. Colorism. Exists very largely in Madagascar. Actually exists largely in the world. Right? There's another one from Madagascar here. A lot of the leadership does tend to be from one tribe, which does tend to be lighter skinned and sometimes significantly lighter skinned. The central part of the island, which just so happens to be the mountainous part, the capital part, is where the money is, where the education is, where the resources are, where people with light skin and straight hair are. The coast tends to be people with less resources, less money, dark skin, and not straight hair. In some places and in some instances, that's a tension. It's a real tension. There's a tension sometimes between the tribes, and sometimes it's not just a tension between the tribes, but just a deep-rooted belief that to be lighter-skinned or to have straight hair is better or more beautiful. Yeah. It is preferred. That internalized colonialism, this is very much connected to our larger discussion that we've been having on the campus this week, that Yeah, we've done some crazy things to all of us about how we understand and see each other. So, yes.
If you were to visit there, mm-hmm. you spoke French.
Yes.
Do a number of people speak French in the country?
A number of people speak French in the country. Certainly the French do. And there are quite a few of them. There are certain areas of the country where they speak a lot of French, a lot more French than others. Hannah's here, by the way, just if I keep pointing her out, sorry to put you on the spot, Hannah, I won't make you talk right now. But Hannah was a Yagam in Madagascar last year, and she was in a place called Diego or Ansaranan, which is in the northernmost part of the country, and that was very French, heavily French influence, much more than the rest of the island, and I would venture, I don't know if we've talked directly about this, but that was almost, it was so French that was sort of held you at a different spot than even your other Yagams, because they didn't venture into that reality, because it was definitely Malagasy.
Yeah. Yeah. And kids usually go to school in French and then have Malagasy lessons. So it's kind of like going to school in the U.S., going to like a Spanish immersion school maybe, and then having English lessons. But you speak English at home.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yes. Okay. I'll keep. So politics. I think they're just going to be in the way forever, unfortunately, or fortunately. No, definitely not fortunately. So. So let's talk a little bit about infrastructure. Great topic. That's what you signed up for. But water, electricity, internet, but let's focus on water and electricity. Do all of you have those every day? Do you? Every day?
Even up here.
Does it ever cut out? You're kidding me. They have places in the world that you don't lose this? Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So for me, we have, I live in the capital city, which to me, I always thought that if I'm in the capital city, I'm gonna have the best or the access to most things, right? Is that generally how it works? But we're not getting enough water. I dare to say climate's changing in one way. We're not getting enough water. There's a lot more people moving to the city. Power is generated through water, so it's mostly hydroelectric. This past rainy season, we got 60% of the rain that we're expecting. If you're ever whining this year a little bit in this fall about electricity, you have any problems, I want you to think about Madagascar. Where last year when we had more rain in the capital city, we only lost power for like up to 6 hours a day. And we only lost water for up to 10 hours. So we'll see what happens.
Is it predictable or is it just sporadic?
Sometimes it's predictable because they're managing what they have. And sometimes the infrastructure is just not solid enough. So, but I've got it good. I mean, I'm from my perspective, that's what I see. But there's other places where it hits even worse. Yeah, yeah. So water. Yeah. And the roads, we started with the roads. So it's really hard to get to different places. This is Taxi Bruce from, this is a long one. This is from the south, Hannah. This is from the one that goes from Tulliar to Fort Dauphin, if that means anything to anyone. But check out this road and check out the sharing of the road. This is, again, one of the major national roads in the country. And those yellow containers up above, those are water containers. So people are prepared, you know, to be having to manage their water when they get to where they're going. So yeah, the road system. We've seen some of this.
There was someone hanging off the side of the bus.
Whoops. Woo, whoop, whoop, whoop. I'm going the wrong way. I'm getting you all. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't, that's not like, you'll always see that, but that's not an odd occurrence.
No, the African continent, these kind of painted buses that are like movie themed and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen that more in the continent, but apparently it's on Madagascar.
This was actually, I didn't see a lot of this.
Oh.
But I thought it was just a great shot to show a lot of different things, so... Yeah, but obviously it exists, because there it is. Yeah, and we've looked at this picture, the roads, it's a village road. This is another main road. So what they end up doing in different parts of the country, this is not as main as the one with the jugs on top, but this is the road. So that is my car. But I didn't have the heart to go through, so I walked around. Like it was going to matter, right? So, like, if it didn't make it, then I could watch it not make it from a different view, I guess. But what happens is we kind of have to investigate the depth, and it was too deep, so they came around this, which also has water, but not as deep. So, yeah, it's a great car. We've pushed its limits because we've had to.
And so you have a driver
then? Yeah. Yeah, the roads are, look at these roads. Would you want to drive them? Oh my gosh. And then me being out alone, it's really not the most secure situation for the long distance. There's a lot of military and police that are on the way checking all the time. I don't think I would really ever be fearful of my life or, you know, that. But how many bribes do you want to pay as you're going through? So that is that. So here's another, what do you think of this?
Those are like two rowboats with a ferry.
It's a ferry. Yeah.
It's the express.
Does it say the express? It might be the express. Yeah, I really love this picture, but yeah, so that's, I'm on a different boat looking at that, but let's see here. Yeah, I want to show you what happens. Sorry if it's juggly here, but we look at it. So this row is one of those. That row is another one. Ooh, sorry. So they come all together. And see these? This is how they get this off. These people, it is people who, you know, pull that in, get it. You drive over that.
Planks.
Yeah. What do you think?
They're a little flexible.
Yeah. Are you now wondering, are you still wondering why I have a driver? Pretty amazing. Yeah. So that's. I mean, I think it's pretty ingenious actually, because this is figuring out a way to support the tourist industry, which has economic viability for this area, right? And you know, whether you know or not, I'll tell you right now. Like this is a tourist. There's my car. A tourist. Right. Very ingenious and creative people that we...
Tourists come to see
the landscape and they come to see animals. For the most part, yes. And there are some other things as well, but that's the big gist. So you got a sense of this? It's crazy, huh? Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So you can't get a license until you've been there 6 months. Most people choose not to stay 6 months before they start. So you rent a vehicle and then a driver, and then you get around to where you're going. And look at, he backs up onto the other boat to move forward. It's quite a reality. Okay, more to talk about.
You have a standardized boat height there, apparently.
I don't know that anything is all that standardized.
I
know, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, happens to work.
Whatever works is the standard. So there you go. I'll move on from there. A couple of different things that we talk a lot about and we witness a lot in Madagascar is just issues around the environment. I was looking for more of a desolate picture, but I didn't find it in the set of pictures I have on my computer right now. But you can see this, you know, this is sort of a burning for agriculture that's going on. Yeah, I believe it's like 80% of the forest has been burnt and does not exist anymore on the island. Burnt and or logged or some other form of destruction. And that's, it's heartbreaking actually to see it. There's some areas where you can be, I've been in a smaller plane where you can look out or even up on a vantage point and you can look out and you can't count the number of fires that you see. So, the environment. Another issue that kind of comes up a lot that we talk about as a group and we experience is consumption. How much we are used to having and using in the United States, where the average Malagasy person is still going to use way less and consume way less than we are even here in this context and have need for so much less. This is actually taken inside of just a hallway of a dorm at one of the seminaries. And these are like their rice cookers. Like this is the flame and you put the... So that ends up being like the kitchen. And that room ends up being the house. I don't know how much I want to say about this other than it's a struggle living and existing in a place where your excess will sometimes be more than a family's dream. We talk a lot about sexism and gender realities. I've spoken to you about some of those things. For those of you who haven't heard, I'll just say, women are not ordained in the Malagasy Lutheran Church. So that instantaneously puts me in a really interesting place. Being the one who's heading up a program and representing the church in that way and trying to figure out how to be true and faithful to my calling and the church that sent me, yet recognizing that I'm in a place that doesn't recognize me all the time and even forbids me to do certain things, like serve communion, for example. Or in certain settings, even won't allow me to wear my robe and vestments to preach, even after I've been asked to preach there. I think, though, much harder than what I experience is what I watch my sisters in Christ experience and their challenges and understandings and hopes and their rootedness in a very traditional culture that doesn't have a whole lot of space for them to hope and envision beyond where they are. You know, their role as a woman is like to cook and to clean and to make babies, and those are all good and valuable things. But that's not, I say this as a single 48-year-old woman, that is not what all of us are called to do, right? And so not all of these women, so many of these women struggle with that. But I think one of the things that's really interesting too for what we notice in another culture is what happens when we come back to the United States. And we see those things happening in similar lights, right? Do you want to talk at all about this, Hannah? I'm going to kind of give you the microphone.
Sure. Oops. I'll just stand right behind you. I guess the main thing that I noticed in coming back to the U.S. after having spent a year in Madagascar was that sexism in the U.S. is largely, we've made many steps with the movement of feminism and everything, many more steps possibly than Madagascar, but we still have sexism in the same ways. A lot of things that I noticed coming back was that we have sort of this privilege of living possibly above, I don't know if that's the right word, but above all of these, all the problems that are more easily ignored here, can't be ignored in Madagascar. So every day I would be catcalled, proposed to, just a wide variety. People, I taught an English class. Men would sometimes try to take over my English class if they were there to learn. Just several things that were less easy to ignore being there, but the same issues are still relevant here in the U.S. as well. Have you talked about sexual tourism at all, Kirsten?
Yeah, but why don't you bring that up since you just mentioned it?
Oh boy, can I?
Yeah, let me say before you start.
Yeah, sexual tourism. Yeah, I want Hannah to touch on this because it comes out of poverty, right? And we mentioned before, this is the poorest country in the world that's not in conflict or at war, right? So tourism, sexual tourism, all sorts of things that we want to judge in a moral light sometimes come to be for survival. Hannah lived in a place where it was utterly blatant, and that's why I think she's the one to talk about it.
Yeah, so I lived in Diego Suarez, which is a pretty popular tourist destination slash place where usually French men will go to retire or will spend several months of the year there so they're in France maybe 9 months of the year and then they come to Madagascar for their other 3 months. And just every single day I would see an old French man with a very, very young Malagasy woman. Sometimes I dare to say 13, 14, the girls would be.
And define old for the men.
Old, no less than 60, usually. 60 to 90 years old, usually. And it's just everywhere. They're walking together, usually shopping. But it's hard to ignore because it's everywhere. And I was it's very troubling to see that all the time. But I was also forced to come to terms with the fact that some of these women are totally willing participants in, yeah, sometimes with very young girls, it's their families who are sort of forced to make money in this very non-traditional, troubling way. And other women who are older than 18 choose this path because it's kind of, you're looked up to as having a higher status possibly. You get to have nicer clothes. You might not have to work, things like that. Yeah, do you have a question?
Yeah, a lot of other places,
I have less knowledge about human trafficking. For the most part, it's what you see on a daily basis in Madagascar is just men who are there for either a short term or a long term who want a companion. Is that the right word for it? I don't know. It's Yeah, I guess you could say that. When you have no other choice, it's sort of hard to look at it that way. Some families literally will have all daughters, and that's another thing too. If you have sons, they can work from a young age, and that's a socially appropriate thing to do. But with daughters, they might also help doing household things, but they don't really bring in money. And so this is a way that girls can bring in money. It's not good, but... Oh, every day. Yes, every day.
Because you said
proposed to. Yep. Mm-hmm. Every single day. And that was also a part of my whiteness, but definitely part of being a woman as well. Something that was really hard to adjust to for the first couple months I was there, and then I sort of watched how Malagasy women deal with that, which is oftentimes like catcalling back or, you know, playing back and forth, which sort of helped me cope with the rest of the year, but still a very troubling thing that happens every day.
What is the living wage for a family in this country?
A living wage?
Yes.
Well, that's a little tricky. So we know statistically that, Hannah, thank you. We know statistically that, like I said, 90% live on $2 or less a day, and many, many, 78% live on much less than that a day. I think what makes it hard to even answer that question is I don't see people living in the standard I'm used to living in. Does that make sense?
What does it take to survive a day? Do they get food or buy it or raise it?
People buy it. People go hungry. People share it. People have two meals instead of three. People come across money and feast for a while. You know, sort of every version of that. I don't know I don't understand what it would actually take. Because I'm thinking of my driver, for example. And go to his home. And it's just a different reality in how many people live in that house. That house is maybe 300 or 400 square feet tops, and that's big. That's a big deal, right? And there are three generations of people there, and he's living well and not really all at the same time.
And how much does he earn?
Enough. I'm not going to talk about that. He's a friend, too. Just as I wouldn't talk about what you earn, or, yeah. 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 Okay, so how about this? Let's go from this angle. So if you were a professional, let's say you were a doctor, you might make a million ariary a month. $3,000 equals $1. So what's that? A doctor is at $330 a month. Okay, at the top, kind of like at a topper, more the top profession. right? A teacher might make $200,000 to $400,000 RER a month. So what is that? Somewhere between 75 and 130 a month. Yeah, I'm comfortable talking those terms. So I didn't want to shut you down. It's so hard to maintain dignity for all involved. Yeah. So
put in perspective, for example, a registered nurse in Tanzania would make around $300 a month.
Okay.
How would that compare? They're considered one of the 25 first countries.
Tanzania's, yeah. Women, let's go on. Yeah, so but there's also this element of wealth that is happening in Madagascar. So this comment is juxtaposition of wealth and poverty. So this is what I look out from my back window or back balcony. You can see the railing down here. I look kind of down the hill at a very immense gathering of houses. I've actually never even walked through here. These are all, they're kind of like all built on top of each other. I walk around or on the other side and on the back side of that. And then when I look out of my front window, I often see things like this. So this is a band of brothers, maybe? I don't know. Four of them. I don't even know how old we think these guys are. Three, four, five, tops. And this is another way that young men can make an income in the city, is going around and playing instruments for money. So there's always, and it's usually the youngest one or the smallest one who's walking around with some sort of thing to hold out for. So sometimes when I look out, it's a band like this. Sometimes I look out and see a mother and a child. Sometimes I just look out and, yeah, we see lots of different things. And this is all happening, this sort of desperate situation, though no one ever complains out loud. Yeah. So this striking, here's another striking image of wealth and poverty, huh? I took this picture forever trying to get it to make it the clearest I could to see that. This is in Fort Tifon. And so this building even has an elevator, which is kind of significant. There really aren't that many buildings with elevators. I think it might be the only building with an elevator in the city, but nonetheless.
Is it a residence or an office building?
That's an office building, and I believe that it's like at least one of the tenants is insurance company. So it's the same as everywhere. Who's got the money? The banks, insurance, all these things. And we need all those pieces too, but it's just very... It can feel a little bit almost like a visual assault. And something that in the United States, we've done this job of like separating ourselves from it. We can always go somewhere else, not just out into the wilderness, but we can go be somewhere else, even around our cities, to stay away from the things that we may not want to see. But when you're in Madagascar, it's kind of right there. Yeah, so, yeah, and I've kind of gotten into this, what this slide was going to help me remember was this racism, colorism, and tribalism. And one of the other things about that I wanted to point out was, so we talked about that there's 22 different tribes all over the island in different places. They have different cultures, different modes of dress, different traditional modes of dress. Many people dress very modernly. You can see kind of a mix of what the women here are wearing.
different songs, dialects, even sayings in there. But yeah, one of the things, and you notice this internationally, and this really bothers me, and I think this is why I want to bring it up again or make sure I've made the point, is this idea of colorism. That this didn't happen with this group of women. These are all actually educators at a seminary. But this comparing of skin and all the time and being told that you're beautiful because you're white, or you have beautiful hair because it's straight. The word for white in Madagascar or Malagasy is futsi. And some places and some people will define their skin based on the color of white. And where we might say it's white to emphasize, like, it's the purest of white. It's the whitest thing we can find. We'd say the word twice. Or white, you know, whatever. You just want to keep, and the more you say it, the more emphasis you say it. But if you say, in Malagasy, the more times you say it, the more you step away from it. So a disturbing example of that to me would be to someone to say that you're futsi and I'm futsi. You following what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, I hate to leave on that. Let's see what else we have. Oh, that's a more hopeful picture. Yeah. But Madagascar has been a wealth of learning. It's been a journey of heartbreak and renewal. It's been a place where I have had to die to myself and my understandings many times, and have been able to find people to be with me and walk with me through those moments. All the things that we've talked about today, as hard as they are for me, I can't begin to imagine what it's like to not have an escape. I have a passport, a ticket home, a mom and dad that no matter what will let me flop on that couch, even at this age. Right? I have a network and abilities and dreams that will never at one moment be crushed. So I'm thankful to see the resilience that lives within a place that finds many challenges, but also a place that knows great joy. For they do not define themselves, and I'm speaking in a very broad brush way, that people do not generally define themselves by what they do not have, but what they do have. So Hannah's host dad has said more than once something along the lines of, you come here and you see our poverty, but what we want you to remember is our hospitality. We want you to remember our love and our grace and our peace. And I think that's what we'll leave it on today. Thank you so much for being here. Those are baobabs. That's kind of like the iconic tree that people come to see. And there are, I don't know if there are 8 or 9 or 10 different species, but all but one of them are indigenous only to Madagascar. So, and this is from a place called the Avenue of the Baobabs. So people come specifically to see them there. Yeah.
How is the wood used? Or they harvested some? Or
this? This is We're trying to just keep these in place for the view. But they do produce fruit, which people eat and can eat. It's a really weird fruit, but kind of fun all at the same time. Is that right? But like anything in Madagascar, stuff does get used for a multitude of ways, but I don't know exactly how baobab would may or may not get used. Yes?
Not having heard your other talks, what is the religious makeup of the country?
Sure.
What percent is Christian, Islam, for example, Native religion?
It is 42%. These are all, you know, statistics are rough in Madagascar, just across the board, but 42% Christian, and the primary religions is basically a third of that are Lutheran, Protestant, which is connected with the Reformed tradition, and Catholic, 8% Islam, and 50% indigenous faith, so ancestral worship usually.
Life expectancy.
I don't have a statistic for that, but I will tell you I have witnessed and been to many funerals of people in their 60s, and I just don't see a lot of older people. They exist, but I don't see a ton of them. Yeah. Yeah.
The Tosos that I've known, or family, they said as kids they would have clubs, and they'd beat on the ground,
mm-hmm.
and little insects would come out, and they'd put them in a bowl, and they'd eat them like popcorn.
You know, they lived in the South, and I'm not as familiar with that, but I don't doubt it. I don't know anything about, just talk about insects, that they'd take a stone or a wood thing and raise the insects from the ground and eat. Yes, creative eating does happen sometimes in Madagascar. You know, one creative eating thing I'll share with you is, did you know that chicken butt is what you give to the honored guest? Yes, chicken butt.
You sound like that's a first-hand experience.
It certainly is.
I assume that's like that fatty tail section.
It's like all bone and nothing. Yeah, yeah, it's great. It's really great. Do I have any information on...
Life expectancy.
That's what I was just saying. So information on life expectancy. No, I don't know. I was just saying that I have, like, statistically, anecdotally, I have been to and aware of many funerals of people in their 60s, and I don't see a lot of people much older than that. And it's never shocking to people when people go at that point.
What do you see as the most promising
The most promising outlook for the future of Madagascar. Oh gosh, this is going to be such a negative answer. I'm really concerned about the election and what's going to happen.
No matter who wins.
Well, what they're saying, and this is, and maybe I hope it wasn't boring to talk about it, but it really is a big deal. And what the worry is right now is that the current president will not allow those other two to run. And if he doesn't allow the other two to run, there will be violence. There will be reaction. So I hope not another coup. Oh gosh, right? I don't want to know what it's like to emergency evac people out. You know, I just don't want to learn that. So we're watching it really closely and make decisions because we don't want to be in a evac situation. We want to be evac'd out in like calmness. Before, if we think it's going in that direction.
What do people die of there?
Diabetes, cancer, malaria. People die of a lot of things that are easily cured, that there's just no finance to either get the medicine or sometimes the medicines aren't available. Like I've got a volunteer coming who has diabetes, and I told her, I said, you need to bring absolutely everything you need for the year. Everything you need to bring for the year. Because you may or may not find it.
Yeah.
And that was hard for her because she's like, I don't understand. You can't tell me there aren't people there with diabetes. I'm like, I'm not telling you that.
Yeah.
I'm telling you they don't have the stuff they need. Yeah. And people don't test for things either, so we don't always know why. Because why would you test for something if you know you don't have the money to buy the treatment for it, right? So.
How did Yagam choose Madagascar as one of its locations?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if I can fully answer that question. I'm the second coordinator there, so I was not there for the startup. But what I can tell you is, oddly enough, Madagascar and the American Lutheran Church has been very connected for a long time. So we arrived as American missionaries in 1887. Yeah, 130 years. 150 years is the Norwegian arrival, the Lutheran Norwegian arrival. And I know that we're connected, I believe we're connected because of the American Norwegian and all that stuff. But there was a time not that long ago where there, you know, when I say not that long ago, 2-3 decades ago, where there were 40 families, 40 American missionary families there. That's why you can get into circles where a lot of people know something about Madagascar, or I knew someone, or Julie Schultz was here. She just left on the bus out, 25-year missionary in Madagascar. I didn't, you know, I got heads up before she came here. It wasn't planned. But there you go. See how you just keep running into. There's so many. You know, people who still come back and forth. I mean, there's Hannah was there 2 years ago. You know, like that's a lot of connections for such a random place.
Was it a French colony from day one?
It was a French colony from 1896.
The reason I asked that is, well, I have to be quite familiar with Tanzania, and it was German until World War I, which explained the Lutheran heritage there.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm questioning here, I always think of Catholic heritage with France. It's rather interesting what you're saying.
Yeah, I think that I think one of the reasons why, well, there was a, such a strong, there was a strong missionary. Yeah, thank you. I don't know why we didn't do that earlier. Sorry, I didn't even think to ask. There was such a strong missionary connection doing the work, but even more than the missionaries being there, the revival movement that we talked about on Wednesday, that really works with the works with the population in all corners of the island from a really indigenous way. That's really grown the faith. People are really faithful, exuberantly faithful, in a way that might make a lot of us actually uncomfortable, if I'm completely honest. Yeah, Hannah's shaking her head, yep. Yeah, okay, one here and there.
There are several missionaries there still, right?
There is me. There is the Yagams that I bring, and Timba, who is the regional director, so over Madagascar and, well, Francophone countries in Africa. He happens to live in Madagascar. That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
For Americans.
For Americans.
So the primary work that you and the Yags are doing is what?
My primary work is looking after the program. My secondary work is church relationships, right? But, and so the primarily English teaching.
Okay.
In relationships. I mean, there really are, the focus of Yagam is actually not as much service as it is relationship. But you need service in order to get into a community and create relationship. Yeah, there was.
The burning of the forest, I think you said 80% of the forest have been burnt. And so if they continue, there's not going to be a forest.
Okay, 80%, okay.
And I was going to say, if tourism is significant, that means probably tourism will come to a halt.
I mean, that's...
So that's where the animals are.
Right. So it's 80% has been deforested, whether it's been through fires or intentional logging. And I don't know the statistics of what that's going on. There are some efforts, though they feel small, in reforestation, but they do exist. There are efforts in different areas where they are working with the local community to turn them from traditional habits into working with the tourists and with the conservation. So they're working with them to find new income sources. Because this is why people do what they do. We need to eat, right? So But yeah, there's no question. You look around and, if this goes. But even bigger than, but the real frustration, I think, for myself as I look at it is, even beyond the tourism, the money is in the gems, the lumber, the cows, everything else that's leaving the country through the black market. And we need another phrase for that, by the way, too. I don't know what is appropriate one, but I'm just going to set it and I'm naming it. But an underground market. Yeah, an illegal market. Yeah. So, yeah. All right.
Where is their underground market? Where does that go? What countries are, what they're...
Some of your gems here.
Gems
are here.
Ever see anything labeled with Madagascar vanilla? Know that that's from Madagascar, and Malagasy people don't actually get to enjoy vanilla.
Yeah.
It's all sent out.
Yeah. A lot of stuff is going to Asia, which makes me suspicious, though, like where it actually ends up to, but yeah, it goes to many places, and things definitely do come here, too. Yeah. Wow. You guys, thank you for being so interested in this. Thank you.